You know, I guess I think I've always been a professional critic, you know, or some sort of professional appreciator or something.
Now, this is serious business here, man. Putting on a great show is the most important thing you can do. One great rock show can change the world.
The latest album by the Drive-By Truckers is full of defiance, protest, and rebellion. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. Mike Cooley and Patterson Hood of Drive-By Truckers join us to perform in front of an audience. And we review the latest record from rapper Kendrick Lamar. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions. This is Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot. My partner is Jim DeRogatis. And this week, we're talking with Drive-By Truckers.
It all started with the border. And that's still where it is today. Someone killed Raymond Passiano. And the killer got away.
Drive-By Truckers, that's a band that's been together for 20 years now, Jim. The band has got roots in the South, Georgia, but also Alabama, and proudly so. Their breakthrough album was their third album in 2001, Southern Rock Opera. You talk about an opus.
I must insert, I've rarely seen you more excited about any record ever than you were about that one.
Well, that was a real breakthrough for them. I think, you know, prior to that, they were sort of regarded as this sort of Southern novelty band in some ways. But that was the real deal, getting at the conflictedness of being a Southerner, you know, paying homage to Lynyrd Skynyrd and at the same time looking askance at some of the culture and the politics of the great American South. That really put them on the map. They've made 11 studio albums in total, rotating cast of musicians and songwriters in the band. Now they've got this latest album, American Band, Jim, their 11th studio album, and you and I both had it in the top 10.
Greg, American Band, I think, is their most political yet. There are songs about gun violence, the Black Lives Matter movement, this moment in red-blue America with deep divides. That is not to say it is a social studies lecture. It is a vibrant and very moving rock album. Greg, was two of the Drive-By Truckers, Patterson Hood and Mike Cooley, joined us in front of a live audience at the Goose Island Tap Room in Chicago. We started the conversation talking about the new album, American Band, and specifically the cover art, Greg, which is a sort of monochromatic, very stark photo of a single American flag at half-mast. The photo came from filmmaker and photographer Danny Clinch, and I asked Mike Cooley where the idea came from to use that image.
There was actually a song we didn't write that I thought about one day I was coming out of the train station in D.C. You know, D.C. had a lot of flags in D.C. And I came out and I noticed all these flags are half-mast, and I didn't know why. It occurred to me that and it still happens. I was like, okay, so why are they half-mast now? Did I miss a shooting? One day I asked somebody, I was like, why are the flags at half-mast? And it was John Glenn had died. I was like, oh, okay, well, that's refreshing. An elder statesman lived to a ripe old age and passed away of natural causes after a life of great accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. Not a tragedy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but we didn't write that song, but when Danny suggested that image for the cover, I thought, perfect, that's the song we didn't write.
Came together extraordinarily quickly, first burst of 6 days recording, is that right?
Yeah.
Tell us about that, Patterson.
We went to Nashville, we finished our fall tour, the year before, 2015, in Nashville, and we had a few days before Thanksgiving, so we thought, let's go in and just like get our feet wet and kind of start the process, and then we'll come back after Christmas and make the record. And we ended up recording 9 songs in those 3 days. And so it was a really quick process. We had fun though. I mean, the record's kind of dark and stuff, but I mean, we had a really good time making it. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of joyous musically. So so we really had a lot of fun in there doing it.
You've always been a topical band, I think, in some ways, but this seems to be even more overt in that direction. And obviously the times have had a lot to do with that.
Yeah, sure.
But there's also the other part of it, you know, you're sticking your neck out maybe a little bit more than ever. And do you ever think about, okay, how is how's the audience going to receive this? And, you know, the sort of the white elephant in the room is that, you know, you're a Southern band. And
yeah, you do have to think about it. I mean, you know, you can't write that stuff without being aware of the possible backlash. Mm-hmm. And so you got to think about it. Do I want to go there? Do I want to pull this trigger? You know, but of course I do. You know, what am I going to do? Go write a bunch of new songs when I got all these? No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, years ago when we did Southern Rock Opera, which was kind of the record that put us on the map as far as, you know, most people are concerned, you know, everyone that heard our idea for this record thought we were crazy and told us we were going to, you know, basically, you know, destroy what we had built up to that point, you know, and it's like, you know, it's like no one wants to hear songs about George Wallace in 2001, you know. Worked out for us, and you know, and I mean, I've always kind of considered us a political band. I mean, that's a very political record. It's just was set in a different moment in time, but not because it was, but part of that was because it was still relevant in 2001, you know, just maybe some of the names had changed by then and some of the exact things, but and unfortunately that stuff's still relevant today.
Mike, I've seen quotes from you that the only thing you've been worried about backlash-wise has been your family. Patterson, writing that editorial after the church shootings, right?
In South Carolina.
Right. And strongly saying, take down the flag, the Confederate flag. Have either of you been trolled or worse by...
Well, we've been trolled, for sure. We've been trolled a lot.
I don't use any social media. I never have. So. I just don't, you know.
Yeah. Smart.
I'm an antisocial son of a, you know.
Yeah. I never feel less social than when I'm on social media.
Yeah, I'll tell you that. Was there anything that shook you up, Patterson?
I mean, the most threats I ever got was when I first wrote What It Means.
And that guy who killed that kid down in Florida standing ground, free to beat up on his girlfriend and wave his brand new gun around while some kid pocket full of skillets. What it means.
I posted that even before the band ever heard it, because I didn't really even think in terms of that being a song that would be a band song. I honestly, in my naivete, thought that it was of a specific moment, and it didn't really occur to me that it would still be relevant 2 years later when we put out a record. I mean, so I wrote it just to get it off my chest, and then I posted it on a Facebook page, I went to bed, and then I woke up the next morning, and holy
lost, you know, I've literally lost count of how many times that's happened since we recorded this album.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's unbelievable. We want to get back to this topic, but you got Mike Cooley and Patterson, who both have acoustic guitars in their hands. You're listening to Sound Opinions at the Goose Island Tap Room. We've got an audience here eager to hear some music. What would you guys like to play for us?
Let's start. Start off with Surrender. This is about the self-defeating defiance and pointless pigheadedness. So many of my brothers and sisters. Mistake for principle.
From the comfort zone of history, on the lips of trusted loved ones, to the wounded, fragile minds of angry youth. No sooner was it over than the memory made it nobler, a selective means by which to point you. Protest if you must. Compelled but not defeated. Been that way forever, and for six long generations it's been told that among the fallen was tradition, and that tradition was the mission, and that the wrongness of the sin was not the goal. Protest if you must. Compelled but not defeated. Does the color really matter on the face you failure, on the shaming for battles losing cause? If the victims and aggressors just remain each other's others, and the instigators never fight their own.
Thank you.
Surrender Under Protest. Mike Cooley tune. He is here with Patterson Hood, the Drive-By Truckers, one of the best bands in America today. Mike, I saw another quote that you gave in an interview somewhere about the writer, the interviewer, had compared you guys to The Clash. And you said, I wish The Clash were here now, today. Do you feel that you're filling that kind of role? Because I do.
Well, that's
it's a big honor, you know. But, yeah, they definitely... They played a role in making this record come together. Mm-hmm. You know?
They sure did. I mean, it was kind of like when wondering how to approach something, it was kind of like, I can't think of a better role model for making a record that's kind of deals with political dissent. And, you know, I keep thinking about, you know, the year I graduated from high school, Rock the Casbah was a hit. And you'd go to like school dances and stuff, and they would play it, and people were dancing to it. And you'd turn on the radio, and you'd hear it on the radio, and it sounded good. It was a hit, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, back when there really were hits, at the same time, it was a very political, kind of a pointed political song that was very timely in 1982 that's still timely in 2017. But it's a great song. And
I think it's the video that did them in.
Yeah, it was a great video. It was 1982. I mean,
a strummer dancing to a boombox in the desert.
A lot of kids found out about punk rock.
Videos didn't get better after 1982.
No, they did not get better.
No. Videos sort of took over.
That was the year it peaked. Maybe 83 may have peaked.
You were mentioning influences, Patterson. We were talking, and you mentioned another old school writer that influenced some of the work that you did.
Tom T.
Record. Yeah.
Yeah, Tom T. Hall. And when I was writing What It Means, and I kind of had the idea in my head of what, you know, what I wanted to say with the song and what it was about. And the whole idea of, you know, Black Lives Matter needs to be addressed from people besides black people, you know, and that you know, that I'm a middle-aged Southern college dropout male, which makes me pretty much a potential Trump demographic. And so I was trying to think how to, like, what kind of voice to write the song in. And I kept coming back to a Tom T. Hall song from about 73 or 74 called Watergate Blues.
McGovern said, boys, I think I'm gonna run. Got a lot of work to be done in Washington. He talked to the poor folks, the blacks and the youth. Humphrey said, George, I think you're gonna lose. He said, I want that job myself. Well, there was Kennedy and Wallace and Muskie in mind. McGovern couldn't seem to get his ducks all in line.
Country music has always been a conservative music, and it certainly was no less conservative then. And Tom T. Hall was a major country music icon star, and he wrote a song that was basically a pro-McGovern country song. And
aren't too many of those.
And then the song ends with basically Watergate and him praying for the country, you know, and he's singing it in the voice of a, you know, Western Kentucky good old boy. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful song. And so I kind of approached What It Means kind of thinking in terms of Tom T. Hall and specifically that song.
When you guys write music like this, it's coming out of a tradition of, as you said, Tom T. Hall, Clash, who wrote songs that, you know, they wanted to make an impact. How do you see your music? Is it going to change minds? Is it going to change the world in any small incremental way?
Probably not. I'm doing it to get it off my chest.
Uh-huh.
That's purely selfish.
Yeah. I mean, small incremental maybe, you know. I mean, it provides, you know, I mean, I know I first learned about things like Sandinistas from The Clash when I was a kid. I don't know how many, you know, high school kids are out there listening to us right now, but I mean, I did, you know, it certainly helped mold who I became to some extent. Springsteen certainly did. You know, I learned a lot about, you know, learned a lot from the things he sang about when I was at a very impressionable age. But, you know, I don't have any kind of, I mean, you know, we would have won the election if we had any power.
The darkest night we look upon, the smoker on the lawn.
After a short break, we'll continue our conversation with drive-by truckers Patterson Hood and Mike Cooley at the Goose Island Tap Room in Chicago. We'll talk about how Mike and Patterson first started writing music together and why the band continues to thrive 20 years into its career. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
We should light out for the trees or the great beyond. Light out for the love of thee. We build our lives upon. Cast aside the hurtful things that bear the fruit of scorn. Darkened flags on the cusp.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. This week we're joined by Mike Cooley and Patterson Hood of the Drive-By Truckers.
I see birds soar through the clouds outside my window. Smell the fresh paint of a comfort shade on this new fall day.
Mike and Patterson talked with us and played some songs from their latest album, American Band, in front of an audience at the Goose Island Tap Room in Chicago. The band's history goes back two decades, but the two of them have been playing together even longer than that. I asked Mike what drew them together.
Shared incompetence. neither of us were very good or had any idea what we wanted to do or...
Well, we thought we knew what we wanted to do.
Yeah, we kind of figured it out together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Mike, I know you were your rep early on was the guitar player guy, and you sort of were a late bloomer in the songwriting. I mean, you had five songs on Southern Rock Opera, and it was like, wow, Cooley's written five songs on this record. That was kind of like a big breakthrough. And now it's kind of back and forth. You two are almost having a dialogue with those songs. What accounts for that? What brought the songwriting on in sort of later part of your relatively speaking?
There were a lot of things. For one thing, I realized, I was 25 by the time when I started trying to write songs. And before that, I'd kind of wanted to just be a player. But I started realizing I didn't really have the skill set to just do that. And I didn't really want to be that either. I don't think I really wanted to do all the things I would have needed to do to develop those skills. And I had a lot going on up here, and writing the songs kind of became a way of a little bit of self-therapy.
Mm-hmm.
All those years ago in the first band we were in, and I wrote all the songs in that band, and we'd be hanging out, and Cooley would be saying stuff, and I was like, man, you should write this down. I mean, he would basically be talking song lyrics that would be better than anything I was writing. And I was like, you should write, and he would usually say something very nasty in response to that. But when he started actually writing songs, the fact that they were almost immediately phenomenal to me was really no surprise.
You know, I don't know if I've ever talked to you extensively about your background with, your dad is a very famous musician, at least for among musicians, right. David Hood, who was the bass player in the Muscle Shoals rhythm section.
It's not a household name, but it is among studio musicians.
So I just wondered, did your dad ever say, don't do it, son?
Yeah, constantly. Until Southern Rock Opera, he pretty much said... I mean, he thought I was crazy, and he thought that we were kind of dead set on condemning ourselves to never having any kind of success.
And like I said earlier, we kind of sucked, and he could tell.
Yeah, he
was like a real player. I mean, he was a session guy. You know, he didn't play wrong notes, and he was never out of tune. That studio session guy thing is a very a lost art.
He didn't get drunk and take off his clothes on stage.
Never, not once.
Would he tell you? I mean, there's the horrible thing.
Oh no, he
about,
totally told me. He told me to go to school. He said, "Go to college. You don't have what it takes to do this." And I mean, he told me that when I was a senior in high school, and it kind of crushed me. And I did go to college, and I didn't play music the 4 years I was in college. I never stopped writing, but I didn't touch my guitar until my last year in college when I moved in to a dump apartment that he happened to be the other roommate in, which is how we met. And he had a guitar and I had a guitar, and he's like, I guess I should sit around and play guitar with my roommate. And that's how we started playing together 32 years ago.
Wow.
Too broke to go out and do anything.
Yeah. It's like, well, we can afford us a 12 pack of Rock Gut beer and sit around and play.
We'll amuse ourselves.
Yeah.
How about Amusing Us? Have you got another song?
All right. I wrote this one. My family and I, we moved cross country back in 2015, and we moved to Portland, Oregon, and which is a beautiful town and But my family was kind of blindsided by the amount of homesickness in. And so it was kind of reaping havoc in our home. So I wrote this song kind of about that and a bunch of other stuff, some of which ties in with some of the politics on the record, too, and just how us Southerners act sometimes. So it's called Ever South.
The ocean to start a new life in this land so bold and vast. Dispersed from Ellis Island, my distant Irish kin, eyes cut to the future, hearts tied to the past. We held tight to each other and we held on to the promise and scraped our meager living hand to mouth. Prayed to what would have us ever doubting John Thomas, spread through Appalachia ever south. Spread through Appalachia ever south. And I hear we weren't welcomed here, at least not in those days. No one needs our drunken, fighting, thieving kind. But we settled in this new place and we worked it in our ways and we spread our kin upon it in due time. Spread our kin upon it in due time. And we fought our losing battles and we held on to our ways and we talked of how we left behind our better days. Some living lives of leisure, some surviving hand to mouth, bash our heads against the future ever south. Bash our heads against the future ever south. When I cast my eyes upon you, we were both still in our prime. We were moving in big circles that I sought out to combine. And I held you in my arms and swore eternal love is time. Tried to lasso brighter futures, let it drag us both behind. Lasso brighter futures, let it drag us both behind. So we aimed our sights westward like so many did before, debating our surroundings for some distant shore, where everyone takes notice of the draw that leaves our mouth. So no matter where we are, we're ever south. No matter where we are, we're ever south. My Christian Southern brethren, well, I'll tell you all what for, to leave your heathen ways up in you and your shoes outside the door. Take a stand for noble causes till you just can't stand no more and surrender to some Savior, praise the Lord. Surrender to some Savior, praise the Lord. Whistling past the graveyard looking down.
of my complexion and the Scottish in my dance. From the way I bang my head against my daily circumstance. This blue-eyed southern devil takes me out upon the ground. Ridiculous and charming, I'll take it into town. Tell you stories of our fathers and the glories of our house. I always told a little slower ever south. Always told a little slower ever south.
Ever South from the Drive-By Truckers on Sound Opinions at the Goose Island Tap Room. Beautiful rendition of it with Mike Cooley and Patterson Hood. I wanted to ask you about longevity because we've been joking about 31 years and 20 years for the band, which is remarkable. And I know that a few years ago, the band was going through some tough changes. And was there a point, Mike, did you feel that things were not in such great shape and you were wondering if the Drive-By Truckers had a future at that point?
Multiple times over the years. But, you know, we finally figured out, the two of us anyway, we're making a living doing this. We don't have to go to day jobs. Let's fix whatever's wrong and keep doing this because I don't want to go to work.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of our motivation for a lot of things we do is to never have to go back.
I'm a college dropout too, you know. And I don't have the people skills to be a Walmart greeter.
He really doesn't.
Oh, my God. But
would you guys, you know, Greg and I try to chip away at this huge story, you know, where the music industry is today, where it's going financially. Would you guys be able to sustain yourselves and your families if it wasn't for playing as much as you do?
No. You don't get the mailbox money like you used to.
Right.
You know, nobody does.
But basically, you know, given that recording revenue is non-existent or very humble, you're now looking at being like, you know, Willie Nelson or Bob Dylan. Yeah. You guys are going to be doing this when you're 70-something.
Yeah, most likely.
Hopefully,
If my health holds up, I'll definitely will.
I expected you to register horror when I said that, but you guys are actually seeing
it. Yeah, we're cool with that.
Hopefully.
I'm cool with it.
I mean, yeah, my fear is that I can't.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I mean, that I have a stroke or something, God forbid, at, you know, when my kids aren't even grown yet, and I've got to figure out how to support them because there is no backup plan at this point.
So we got one more song that you guys
sure
can play us. What are we going to hear, guys?
This is called Once They Banned Imagine. This is probably the oldest idea on the record because I've thought about this for several years. Once I became aware of that, the list that went out to all the radio stations after 9/11 with this long list of songs and artists that they recommended they not play, it was an absurd list from start to finish. But John Lennon's Imagine was on that list. And one day, several years later, I got in the car and the radio was on and Imagine was playing. It had suddenly appeared on radio again. And I don't know, right then I thought, I'm going to write this song. You know, I'm going to write. And anyhow, it's about how every time we get scared, the same people always wind up being blamed for it. And it can't possibly be their fault every single time.
Fighting their wars from the grave.
complete with record burning and threatening and spurning the crime of getting blood on the page. Since the big one in, we'd been mostly pretending we'd have had the same gumption and grit as the greatest among us. When harm came upon us, we wouldn't hesitate to defend. But with or against, something's been out to get us, and it looked like something finally did. No nobler cause in our lifetime for setting our sails to the wind. But once they banned Imagine, it became the same old war it's always been. Once they banned Imagine, it became the war it was when we were kids. Once they banned Imagine, it became the same old war it's always been. Once they banned Imagine, it became the war it was when we were kids. Are you now, or have you ever been in cahoots with the notion people could change? When history happens again, if you do or you did, you'll be blamed. From baseless inquiry to no-knocking entry becoming the law of the land, to half-cocked excuses for bullet abuse regarding anything browner than tame. Cause once they banned Imagine, it became the same old war it's always been. Once they banned Imagine, it became the war it was when we were kids. Once they banned Imagine, it became the same old war it's always been. Once they banned Imagine, it became the war it was when we were kids.
Thank you.
That wraps up our conversation with Patterson Hood and Mike Cooley of the Drive-By Truckers. We've got a video of their performance at the Goose Island Tap Room, and you can find that at soundopinions.org. And as always, we want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on Drive-By Truckers' latest record? Leave us a message on our hotline at 888-859-1800, or you can connect with us on Facebook or Twitter. When we get back, we're going to review the new album from Kendrick Lamar and a new collection inspired by The Man in the High Castle. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
out there for me. Yeah, yeah.
I remember syrup sandwiches and crumb allowances. Vanessa put in with some counterfeits, but now I'm counting this. Parmesan where my accountant lives. In fact, I'm down in this. You say with my boo babe tastes like Kool-Aid for the analyst. Girl,
welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis, and that's a track called Humble from the new Kendrick Lamar record, Damn, on Sound Opinions. Lamar is one of the greatest voices in hip-hop last decade, without a doubt.
Yeah, no two ways about
He's setting the bar for everybody else. The mixtape that really put him on the map for a wider audience came out in 2011. It was called Section 80. He followed up the next year with his major label debut, Good Kid, Mad City, went platinum, went to number two. In 2015, raised the bar yet again with the hugely ambitious To Pimp a Butterfly, combining everything from free jazz, funk, and soul to spoken word, the history of black music basically consolidated in one record. Won a Grammy Award for Best Rap Album, one of seven Grammys that Kendrick Lamar has won in his career. And now we have his fourth album, Damn. Let's play a track from it before we review it. It's called XXX from Kendrick Lamar on Sound Opinions.
I went in front of the spot and watch him hit his block. I catch the leaving service if that's all I got. I chip a the then throw the in his lap. Walk myself to the court like I did that. Ain't no black power when your baby killed by a coward. I can't even keep the peace. Don't you f*** when the hours it be murder in the street. It be bodies in the hour. Ghetto baby on the street. Paramedics on the dial. Let somebody touch my mama, touch my sister, touch my woman, touch my daddy, touch my niece, touch my nephew, touch my brother. You should chip a nigga, then throw them in his lap. Matter of fact, I'm about to speak at this convention, call you back.
All right, kids, we're gonna talk about gun control.
Pray for me.
Damn.
That is XXX by Kendrick Lamar from his new album, Damn, depending on how you count, fourth studio album, I think, of his career, Greg. It takes a considerable talent to share space on a track with Bono of U2 and not be overshadowed by him in the least. I think Damn is the least audacious album that Kendrick Lamar has given to us yet. It is a grower. It doesn't hit you in the head the way that Mad City or To Pimp a Butterfly did almost instantly. We have sort of a combination of more traditional L.A. gangster rap, West Coast kind of grooves, and what would almost be pop songs. You know, you have that track Loyalty, which is sort of this simultaneous flirting seduction happening with guest Rihanna. But the more you listen to this album, the more there is to unpack. He is still living in a world of constant threats and the specter of death. America, God bless you if it's good to you, is kind of the theme here. It isn't necessarily to him and to many other people. He also at one point gives us the line, "I don't think I can find a way to make it on this earth." Drake is the superstar in hip-hop known for his introspection and existential angst. Kendrick does it much smoother lyrically, much more impressively with his flow as a rapper, and much more interestingly in terms of musical settings. I think throughout this record, even though it's not as immediately in your face as his predecessors, I continue to get something out of it every time I listen, and I must be on a dozen listens already. It's a buy it record for me.
You're right, Jim, about this being, at least on the surface, less ambitious sounding than its predecessor, To Pimp a Butterfly. This is way more stripped down, but there's still a ton going on here. I love the way he conflates storytelling with the big picture scenarios. In that 2-minute intro, very deceptive. You know, it's usually they're just clearing their throat in an intro like Blood. And here he comes, you know, "So I was taking a walk the other day,"
and it's
storytelling Kendrick, and he talks about meeting this blind old lady and this, you know, this scenario that occurs, and then he blows it out into this bigger picture. Is it wickedness? Is it weakness?
You decide.
He's obsessed with these kind of big picture questions. And that song XXX that we just played it starts out with him counseling this young gangbanger, saying, don't make the same mistakes that I did when I was your age. And then he blows it out. You know, the street violence is just an outgrowth of a bigger problem and a bigger wrong. And he talks about America then, you know, in the next verse. Hail Mary, Jesus and Joseph, the great American flag is wrapped and dragged with explosives. I can't help but think that this record surfaces only hours after we dropped the world's biggest bomb on Afghanistan.
Yeah.
You know, you've got this guy who is taking these street scenarios and painting a picture of what America is, not just his community, but what America is. And the last song on the record, Duckworth, which is, you know, that's his family name. He's talking here about a potentially fatal encounter between his father and the man who would eventually sign him to a record contract. He's basically saying, if that had gone a little wrong, I might very well be an orphan right now. I certainly wouldn't have a record contract. And I would be just like a lot of my friends who ended up in a casket, who grew up alongside me in Compton, California. So, and then the tape rewinds, and we go back to, so I was taking a walk the other day.
Right.
And we're back
to the
beginning of the record again. You know, we're trying to learn from what we've done and make ourselves better. He talks about a cursed people in this record. He's talking about his community. He's saying, how can we get out from under this curse? And how do we work through it? It's a really powerful record. His voice is the central instrument on this record, Jim. It's not all those guest stars that he had on his previous record. It's his voice, and he's playing various characters. It's a really powerful, powerful record, but you got to hang with it a little bit because it's not going to grab you right from the get-go. But if you do hang with it, I think it's a masterpiece. I think it's a buy-it record all the way.
That's a little bit of The End of the World, 1962 hit Greg by Skeeter Davis, as covered by Sharon Van Etten on the new album from Brian Burton, a.k.a. Danger Mouse. The record is Resistance Radio, The Man in the High Castle album. That's a mouthful. There is a series on Amazon Prime. It's run for 2 seasons so far. Stunning visual, stunning writing about what would America look like in the early 60s if Japan and Germany won the Second World War? That spawned this album of music, which is not in the TV show, that Brian Burton recorded with a partner, Sam Cohen, featuring some of today's most acclaimed indie artists, imagining the world of 60s pop standards as if rock and roll never happened, because there would be no rock and roll in a world where the fascists won. This is a very high concept and convoluted thing to explain, and only someone I think as ambitious as Brian Burton, Danger Mouse, could take it on. This is the man who has been a member of Gnarls Barkley, Broken Bells, who's recorded Beck and the Black Keys and Gorillaz. I think the closest analog to this new project is the 2005 album Rome, which was one of my very favorites that year, in which he did the music for an imaginary spaghetti western soundtrack with Nora Jones and Jack White. Nora Jones is back on this, White is not. Let's play a song. We'll come back and give our thoughts. This is Who's Sorry Now by Connie Francis, as done by Angel Olsen and Danger Mouse on Sound Opinions.
Thank you.
That is Who's Sorry Now by Angel Olsen from the new album Resistance Radio, The Man in the High Castle, as produced by Danger Mouse, a.k.a. Brian Burton. Jim, this reminds me a lot of a group called This Mortal Coil, sort of an ad hoc collection of covers curated by the head of 4AD Records. There was a cover of Tim Buckley's song To the Siren. Later on, there were covers of songs by artists like Roy Harper. It was an attempt by a collection of contemporary artists like Cocteau Twins and Dead Can Dance to draw attention to some of these great songs that had sort of faded into a little bit of obscurity at that point in the 80s. And they helped bring them back in many ways. I think the impulse is the same on this record. Burton is having these artists record some of his favorite songs, primarily from the 50s and 60s. You get that vibe that these are great songs. My problem is the interpretations, I don't think, are all that stellar for the most part.
Really?
I mean, The House of the Rising Sun, that is a great song.
Yeah, but that's because you're nuts about that song.
Indisputably a great song.
There is a house in New Orleans.
Not a great cover version of it by Sam Cohen. I think Beck sounds like he's got a cold on Can't Help Falling in Love.
Oh, I disagree. What about Michael Kiwanuka and Khalees?
Those are nice versions, but predictable. I didn't get anything new or new information out of these interpretations. They're quite lovely in some spots. In other spots, Kevin Morby taking on I Only Have Eyes for You. That song, if you know anything about me, is sacred to me. That is an absolute dud of a version. I never want to hear that version again.
See, you being a lot older than me, I think you have a greater emotional investment.
No, it's called I Actually Listen to Music for a Living.
But you also know? You have not seen this series. I think you got to understand, Greg, this is Burton trying to recreate a particular period of recording, and he does that really well. But also these songs take on added resonance because they are American anthems, but from a very different America in the setting of this show, in the novel. And I think that resonates. If you're thinking about fascism having won, then a song like Who's Sorry Now, a song like Speaking of Happiness, even A Taste of Honey begins to sound very different. I think I've caught more resonances than you. For me, this is a buy-it record, and I love it almost as much as I love Rome. For you?
Go back to the originals, Jim. That's all I can tell you, and it's a trash-it record for me.
All right, Mr. Grouchy, what do we have on the show next week?
Jim, you're going to love this show, and I'm going to love this show. The guitar riff. Does anything define rock and roll more than the guitar riff? We're going to look into the greatest riffs of all time.
Greg, special thanks for this week to the Goose Island Tap Room, Adam Yaffe and Andrew Gill helping us out with recording Drive-By Truckers. Side Opinions was produced by Brendan Banasak, Evan Chung, Alex Claiborne, and Iona Contreras. On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So give us a call on our hotline, 888-859-1800.
I've called and I've called you, but each time I phone, they always tell me that you're not at home.
New messages.
Hi, my name is Annie Hart. I'm from New York City. I just was listening to your episode about South by Southwest, and I came down as an artist, and I was paid by Showtime to come play for their showcase. And I just wanted to say that I was listening to Jim's comments about, you know, Nile Rodgers talking about selling out and corporate sponsorship, but I thought that he kind of neglected the fact that if you're an adult and you have children or you have rent to pay or a mortgage, that you can't really afford to tour or buy a plane ticket there unless you are paid for the show. And I've played there so many times with my band or of Last Simone, and we weren't paid a dime, and it was kind of hard for us. And I feel really grateful that Showtime was able to give me $500 to play and a wonderful audience to play with. So that's it. Thank you so much. Bye.
You tell me it's getting better, but every time that we say goodnight, goodnight, goodnight.
Hi, guys. This is Jess calling from Connecticut, and I just listened to your Mavis Staples episode. Wow. I always love the song I'll Take You There, and that segment where you went over the history with her about how they stepped into the studio not even knowing what it was going to sound like.
I know a place. Ain't nobody crying. Ain't nobody worried. Ain't no smiling faces.
Playing that clip from the start of it, it brought tears to my eyes. That was just pure magic, and it was just an incredible illustration of the amazing gift that she's given to us, that Mavis has bestowed upon us. It just blew me away. So thank you. Made me emotional again. Thanks, guys. Love the show. Peace.
Hey, Jim and Greg. This is John calling from San Diego. Yeah, I was just wrapping up the Mavis Staples episode, which is fantastic. And this caller at the end who told this story about dancing on stage with Chuck Berry. And he said he was, I think, 13 or 14 at the time. And it just took me back because when I was 15, I also got to dance on stage with Chuck Berry. And it was at the Stone on Broadway in San Francisco. And my buddy and I show up. The place was already packed, and they had seats laid out. And we were kind of bummed because we figured out, we're going to be stuck in the way back. Somehow, there were two empty seats in the front row. And here we were, I think, sophomores or juniors in high school. And this dude next to me was a big metalhead. And that guy was more into that show than I've ever seen anybody into anything. And to see this big metalhead, just super passionate about Chuck Berry. I was like, this is great. He wrapped up with Johnny B. Goode, of course, and the metalhead next to us. And my friend and I and a bunch of other people got up on stage and dance with Chuck, just like the previous caller described, very similar experience. It's one of those moments where the rock and roll gods are smiling on me. So, thanks, guys. Enjoy your show every week.
Deep down in Louisiana, close to New Orleans, way back up in the woods among the evergreens, there stood a log cabin made of earth and wood, where lived a country boy named Johnny B. Goode, who never ever learned to read or write so well, but he could play a guitar just like a ringing a bell. Go, go!
No more messages.
To give us your opinions on Sound Opinions, call our hotline, 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week with more Sound Opinions, produced by WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.